Today is Sunday. It's December 17th, 2017. This is a Grand Canyon oral history. Today we are interviewing Winslow Burleson, B-U-R-L-E-S-O-N. Winslow is spelled W-I-N-S-L-O-W. On the interview today are Hazel Clark, H-A-Z-E-L-C-L-A-R-K, and my name is Tom Martin, T-O-M-M-A-R-T-I-N. We are driving on Highway 89 to Lee's Ferry. And we're doing that because Winslow is going to launch on a Grand Canyon River trip tomorrow by himself. The watercraft he is taking is a small inflatable kayak. And the last time Winslow and I talked was back in January of 2016, when he had completed a 21-day river trip, again, just by himself and with his small inflatable kayak. So, Winslow, it's been almost 2 years since your last trip and we've last spoke. Could you pick up the narrative back in January of 2016? What was re-entry like for you, away from the canyon, away from the river, and back to New York City?
Yeah. Thank you, Tom. I think it was just pretty amazing to come off of the 21 days, you know, have one last morning on the river, you know that I was going to meet up with you around 1 or 2 o'clock, and just savor that morning, getting out of the camp and getting everything together and paddle down, and there you were, and get a couple of takeout photos and big smiles, accomplishment, get back on, do the checkout. It was Diamond Creek, so we were on the Native American lands and the checkout ranger, and there had been a lot of flooding, and there was the whole road was under a lot of construction, and so they were redoing some of the takeout road. I think as we got back to cellular connectivity, that was the first onslaught. You know, a couple, maybe 1,000 emails downloaded to the cell phone, and first calls to my girlfriend and friends and family, and so that was the hours. And then, the whole de-rigging and cleaning and refreshing and coming into, even just a hot water sink was a tremendous experience. And just looking at yourself in a full panel mural mirror at a weigh station is, kind of a shock in some stance. And you're thinking about this, you're thinking about how you haven't seen yourself for that period of time. You haven't seen anybody for that last period of time. The last 10 days on the river was, I didn't see anybody. I saw a couple of aircraft, helicopters and airplanes, and that was pretty amazing. So, we got myself into the hotel, and one of the things you reminded me to do was document the end of the trip as much as I had been documenting the trip. So I took a lot of photos in the airport, you and me, and on through landing in JFK, one of the biggest cities maybe not one of the biggest cities, but, one of the top 200 biggest cities in the world, 10 million people. Getting back into it. I think, professionally, one of the challenges was I had just finished a grant going in, and there was a lot of expectation that I would be connected and be able to, there were a couple small fires in various ways that I hadn't connected to people, and there was a grant coming up, and there was some concern that I was maybe not going to be able to submit the grant or provide the information that was needed. So there were different levels of preparation and expectation. In terms of going from the calm individuality of thinking about how you and your thoughts are working, and you're thrown right back into the environment where it's other people's thoughts that are impacting you, moment to moment, which is something that I think I probably spend too much time on, and I'm trying to understand how to spend less time on. But it's a constant factor when there are other people around, and you know, those thoughts have an impact. You feel guilty, or you feel like you have to step up and make something right, or you know, do something well, and as opposed to doing something for yourself. So I think that was a big piece of it. But on the other side of things, just having that major accomplishment, knowing that I had endeavored in something that was, you know, near the edge of my ability and succeeded, and that gave a very expansive opportunity to think about what next. What are the opportunities that I want to take on? Do I want to take my small sailboat offshore? Do I, one of the big things I thought about at the end of the trip, the last 6-7 days, was human space travel, particularly to Mars. And so I spent a couple months and hours engaging in thinking about what our current technologies to get to Mars are, and how expeditions to Mars would play out with this new kind of motivation and perspective of what I had just experienced in the canyon, and how isolating it would be, and how much support you would need to put in place, and when it would be possible, what are the time frames and the logistics and the launch windows, and so that was something that was captivating. Eventually, that dissipated a bit, and I got back into my everyday professional life, and that's a big part of the next step. How do I recharge 2 years later and explore what this next trip is going to be about?
So in June of 2016, you'd been off the river for 5 or 6 months, June, July. Did that journey that you'd taken that prior winter, did it give you energy? Did you think about it? Or were you just back in your normal world, normal routine? Or were you carrying something with you?
Yeah, I just spoke about how I was thinking about new, different things that I'd wanted to do, or maybe hadn't done for a while. I started looking into some rock climbing, didn't get very far with that, but I did do a gliding pilot training in August, and I got through by October to solo landing. So I did, got most of the private pilot experience from August to October up in Vermont at Sugarbush Airport Soaring School, and spent, probably, 10 days up there camping one time and 5 days another time. So that's the kind of experience where I had, done my first pilot training as a teenager for an hour here or an hour there, but never put it all together over the years. And so finally decided, hey, this is something I've been wanting to do. I should do it. And, took it up to that stage. So I think that, and a little more artwork that I was doing, some drawing and painting, those are the kinds of things that I think shifted a bit. Another one was just on that day-to-day. I'd been reading some philosophy in the canyon, and reading about, the well-being of animals and our food culture and factory farms, and how eating animals that perhaps had better lives, animals that have been hunted, or as opposed to raised in a factory farm, would be less of a lifetime poor experience for the animals. And so, so since then I've been eating as a pescatarian, which arguably, has a significant environmental impact, either both beneficially because of reduction of the land animals, but maybe detrimentally because of the impact on the sea. So I'm still sort of at that threshold of understanding where I want to be on that. But, that's something that has impacted, day to day, and well-being and health in terms of what I've been eating for the last 2 years.
So I'm curious, did you find a similarity in flying a glider and in Grand Canyon, running rapids or sort of in a way, when I think of flying a glider, you're there by yourself, thousands of feet over the planet, with an incredible view in front of you, and you're all alone. Is there a
Yeah. I think there is a similarity in terms of the mindset and the fortitude, the mental focus, the preparation. I'm going into a rapid. I'm going to do lava. I want it to go this way. And, you know, I'm getting this glider. I got to ensure the checkout, you know, get all the signals. At the start of the glider, you're still surrounded by the ground crew, and you still have the tow pilot in front of you, so there's still a connection. As you get through the tow, you're at the top of the rapid, and you're release the tow hook, and now you're on your own. And I think another, you know, poignant, this is great that you're pointing this out, you know, on my first solo, I was coming around, I was a little higher than the standard, maybe 300 feet higher, and I said, oh, maybe I should just do a little circle here. And I said, nope, I'm going to just keep doing exactly what I was going to, just going to do the pattern, not the circle. And so there was this important moment of inhibition, which I think is an important element of solo experience. So being being able to inhibit impulse, you know, in, that may be dangerous or counterproductive in terms of your safety. You know, there's a balance of when am I going to go do this and when am I not. So the first time on a solo glider trip, it's probably not the time to take an extra circle. You might lose 400 or 500 feet. That angle might be a little higher. Instead of being 300 feet high, you may be 300 feet low. That can make a big difference as you enter the pattern. Same thing with solo at lava. You know, you can decide, am I going to go on the far left? Am I going to go down the right where I did in the summer and maybe more familiar? And, you know, in the end, you're elated by the experience. I think that's the positive side of the correlation. Another piece of it is that after a number of rapids and after a number of large waves on the canyon throughout the trip, there was this sensation of, okay, it's another big wave. You know, this is an experience, you know, but there's another, you know, 10 days of this. There's another, you know, it's just another big wave. It's not the same adrenaline as the first set of waves. You know, it's borderline on lackadaisical or you're getting a little overly confident, but that's the edge. And the same is true for me in the glider where, you know, I was up and we were in the mountain wave, which is the standing wave, similar to the hydraulics on the canyon. You're just able to surf the airflow coming off the top of the ridge. But you can stay there for 20, 30 minutes. And you can go up and down 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 feet. And on some level, it feels a lot like just driving or sitting still. And I mean, it's amazing to see the world and be there and know that this is all happening, but it's also kind of just like driving or, you know, in the sense on some level. And so you get this kind of, what's the next thing I want to do? So in the case of the gliding, you know, I moved away from the wave and tried to do something else I hadn't done before, go along the ridge or, come down, do a couple, heavy skids, slides, and you know, that introduced a new level of challenge and excitement to it. So I think, you know, as you're looking, or as I look for the level of challenge, you know, there's that comparison between most of the activities I do. I do them, they're exciting and challenging, and I grow, and then you know, as I do them again, they provide something different, not the same challenge and excitement, but in the case of this next trip, maybe more reflection. Maybe, you know, I can't discount huge challenge and excitement, that, you know, it could, things could be very different and there could be a lot of danger or new circumstances. But in terms of that next wave, it's quite possible that some of those waves will be very familiar and I'll have to deal with that kind of challenge of the experience.
So one of the things that I think of when I think of gliding and I think of solo journeys through Grand Canyon on the river is inspiration, inspiring landscapes, either seeing them from on high or being in them looking up. get a sense of that inspiration in doing these two activities, or are they, do they not do that for you at all?
I think absolutely. I think they're temporally quite different, because in the canyon, I feel that the inspiration for me was often evolving, looking at the changing of the light across half an hour to an hour, looking at the coming up around a curve. It was kind of over 10, 15, 20 minutes to full days, you know, and I think in the gliding, the experience is, some of the flights are as short as 7 minutes, 10 minutes, longer flights are 20 to 40 minutes, and so, the longest flight was maybe an hour and a half or something, but on the longer flight in the glider, there's a level of remoteness in the glider, in the sense that you are up above, sometimes high enough that you are not seeing, you're seeing features and you're exploring things, but you don't want to be down close to the earth, because that's a point of contact, and if you're in the wrong place, you don't want that contact to occur catastrophically. So there's a bit more detachment, being further away. You are in the air, but you're further away on some sense from feet on the ground and in this world of the canyon. You're up above, floating, and a little more separated.
Yeah, disconnected is the kind of term I was thinking.
Yeah.
At what point did you say to yourself, I need to get back in the permit system and try to get another permit to go through Grand Canyon again?
I think it was... I think it was just natural. I just got the email, and I just signed up for the next permit season, and then was amazingly fortunate to get another trip. So it was less about a reflection of I need to do this, as much as kind of the procedural. I got the email and reactive. The corollary question is, how do I decide to do what I want to do with a trip? Do I do a solo? Do I do a group trip? And in both of these cases, part of the way I go about life is, that I put a lot on my plate and I get busy. And so to some extent, the lack of planning in early enough to get groups or plan for other people has been something that led me to being able to totally control as much as I could about the trip as a solo leader. And so certainly the first trip I learned in, I had gone on a group trip about 6 months earlier to learn how to learn the environment and learn the opportunity. And during that trip, I learned about the potential to do the solo trips and that it might be feasible. And then as I had a few months to decide what kind of trip I wanted to do, I chose to do it solo. This trip, again, I got busy enough and with a lot of different, with life, let's just put it that way. And I came down to, the solo, it was almost by default, knowing that I really enjoyed the first trip and that it was a great default and that it was a very desirable default. But it was in part due to, not thinking about alternatives to the solo. Once I knew that that I could do it, I was thinking that would be a great way to take another reset and come out here, have another 3 weeks where you're not connected and disconnected with the environment, but disconnected from the electronic ethosphere, if you will, all the minutiae and constant barrage of addiction to the email or news or just the everyday cycle. This is what has to happen, and having an opportunity to go back to the canyon and think about one of the big things for me this trip is around creativity, and expanding. So the first trip, I brought a lot of books on philosophy, and that was in part the experience with the moral aspects of food and some other elements of well-being. What this trip, I want to explore elements of music theory, and poetry. And so I hope to be a little more generative, a little more expressive in terms of writing or thinking about sound and words. I have a set of watercolors. I did one watercolor the first trip on day one and didn't do any more. But Stacey Egan was on my group trip the former summer and has done some amazing watercolors. And I think it would be fun to think about, you know, doing some more this trip, combining it with some of the poetry, exploring, you know, the color, the sound, the words, some of those spaces.
Did you get any pushback from, you're a university professor, did you get any pushback from people saying, what do you mean you're going to be totally disconnected? I guess I want to explore this mm-hmm. connectivity issue. The Grand Canyon affords us a multi-week journey to disconnect. No phones, no email, no computer, no Twitter, no news. Just a
right.
disconnect.
And, right.
And why are you looking forward to that?
Well, one of the early experiences, I had a chance to go in 89 with on a family commercial trip in the canyon, and it was during Tiananmen Square, and so you know, that was one of the events of disconnection, you know, coming back out of the canyon and you know, seeing that experience retrospectively. So you know, you never know what's going to be happening or globally or personally when you're away. We were just talking at breakfast, if I wanted to stop at the Phantom Ranch to check the message board to see if somebody needed to contact me. And I'm thinking of maybe passing Phantom without stopping this trip. I felt the first trip I had my phone, and you know, the first day or two there was still one bar, and it, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, not starting my trip because I could stay in this region with one bar and potentially get a text out, you know. And and then at Phantom, I spent half a day or so, you know, some people were getting some text signals on the trail, and, you know, I connected with you, Tom, and, you know, you said, hey, there's a Facebook page up, and they, you know, they're all rooting for you. So that gave an inspiration. But at the same time, it was an overhead. It was a lot of burden. And so, you know, this trip, and then, you know, one more comment about that is, at the end of the trip, for some reason, I discovered that I could read all my old emails on my phone, which is an obvious understanding. But fortunately, I didn't know that until the end, because I hadn't really turned on the phone much. I'd been using my waterproof camera and things for pictures. But that was another detrimental experience to the last day or two of the trip, because I was starting to, I guess one of the reasons I turned on the phone was because I had run out of some of my books and I was starting to read some of the Kindle books. But then I flipped over to the email, and that was a whole nother, similar to what I was saying earlier about the, what do other people think and what are the agendas that you're pursuing and having challenges with, as opposed to the detachment. And so this trip, I don't plan to have the phone with me. I have the beacon, and I'm going to rely on that all the way to the end. So so no, possibly no Phantom, no phone. Just want to get rid of some of those elements that were still tethering me to, you know, still connecting me to the you know, the areas that I wanted to have a respite from. So to really have downtime, personal time. I think even on another level, this is something, even as a solo individual in the canyon, it's the river has the ability to bring anybody at any time. You know, and so while you are solo, there's two parts to that. One, you know that if you wait a few days, there'll be somebody. And two, at any moment, there might be somebody. So even though you're alone for those last 10 days, there's a parameter of not knowing how long you will be alone. You know, so it could have been one day. It could have been, you know, until then it had never been more than 3 days. And so why not continue to see people 3 days? So that's a piece of the connection and disconnection.
So we had talked some months ago. You mentioned you had this trip and you were going, and I was very excited for you. And I asked you where you were going to take out. Were you going to take out at Diamond Creek, 226 miles from Lee's Ferry, or were you going to go all the way through the Grand Canyon to its geographical end at the Grand Wash Cliffs and boat into the Basin and Range, the Western Basin and Range, and take out at Pierce Ferry? And you've decided to go to Pierce. Can you tell me a little bit about that, how that came together?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's inspired by you and your belief in that amazing experience. I'm excited about seeing the way the canyon will transition from being closed to broad open. I guess at this point, and I don't know because I haven't looked at it a lot, but I imagine being kind of in and of the planet at the beginning, in terms of within the Earth. Just the top surface, but maybe half a mile down or a quarter mile down. And then coming out and resting on top of it and floating off, kind of launching in some way into I don't know if you think about the gliders and starting to be at the ground level and ready for takeoff. So I think that will be something that, I started to see a bit of that at the end of my first trip. There, it does open up a little, to hear you describe the rest of it, I imagine that it's, I don't know. I took a Chinese history course in middle school, and we talked about the Yellow River and some of the rivers in China, that they actually had done so much engineering around them that they got up off above the land around them. So there's these huge flooding events and other events. But you think of rivers that have been geoengineered, and I have that notion of being up on top of the plateau on some level. And certainly with respect to starting in the canyon, that will be there, probably not right on top, but that's the kind of imagination that I hold around that space. In terms of actual practical elements, I think, I'd done it one way the first time. I did realize that there was a number of layover days and that adding the 50 miles and cutting one day was quite doable over the course of the longer trip, 21-day trip. And that seemed like a great opportunity to have a new experience.
Nice. What else? What have I not asked you that you're thinking, gee, we should talk about this before I head out for my second solo trip through Grand Canyon?
I mean, I don't think there's any specific thing. I think the thing that I was a little concerned about going into the first trip was that at the end of the summer trip, I had spent about half a day alone in a canyon. It was very hot, and it was just kind of trying to be find enough shade and coolness at the end of a summer August trip. But there was a lot of rumination and thinking about what it was going to be like to re-enter whether I was comfortable being alone. And so as I went into the solo trip, there was an element of concern that a lot of the trip might be like that, because I just experienced that 6 months earlier. But I think the context shifted quite a bit in the sense of being solo and being in charge of my trip. I didn't experience any of that from the summer. I think a lot of that had to do with being in the group context and not having enough control of my time and activity, knowing that I was just trying to stay cool, but also that people expected me back at 4:30 to start making dinner. And again, that crops up that external expectation. Even in this group, in this experience, when the group is around you, there's codependence and changes your perception of what you want to be doing. And so I think a big part as I enter this experience is use that element of self-exploration. You know, what is it that I want to be doing here in the canyon, and then how do I carry that with me forward as I launch out through the plateau and onward? What are the things that I want to be doing after this trip? And so thinking about that opportunity is a big part for me about what this trip is going to be about.
Well, I'll ask Hazel then. Do you have any questions for Whitlow?
No.
Well, with that, we certainly wish you all the best in your next 21-day adventure, and we will hopefully get a chance next year, in 2018, to have a little chat at the end of your trip and hear all about it.
I want to thank you, Tom, and you, Hazel, for making this all possible. Both trips, the inspiration, the motivation in terms of saying this is doable, and some of the logistical support has been very helpful and transforming.
Well, we'll see if you still think that way in another 3 weeks here. This is going to conclude then. This part would be I can't remember the number, part four, I'm not sure. Anyway, today is December 17th, 2017. This has been a Grand Canyon Oral interview with Winslow Burleson and Hazel Clark. My name is Tom Martin, and thank you very much.